What is up, conscious monkeys? Welcome back to another episode of Traveling to Consciousness. As always, I'm your host, Clay Guteri. But in this week, we are actually visiting part two of my conversation with Jacob and Jonathan. So I actually won't be your host for the majority of this podcast session, but you will be hearing my voice as a guest on their podcast, Cult of Conspiracy. So hopefully you enjoy part two. We get into a bunch of stuff about safety, about keeping ourselves safe, building internal confidence. We talk a little bit about the war in Israel-Palestine. Again, this was about 3 months ago, so hopefully some things are aging well. We talk about being on the side of innocence, and we talk about a lot more political juiciness. So hopefully you guys are ready. And with that being said, Jonathan, Jacob, take it away.
Traveling to Consciousness. Exploring spiritual journeys to find answers in uncertainty.
But it seems to me as though in our today's society, there is no rite of passage of becoming a man. There's tribes that will send their kids at the age of like 10 out into the woods and tell them they have to live out there for 5, 6, 7 days, and then they'll come back. And the point of this is that understanding your body, understanding the physical capabilities of it can be a rite of passage. And so that instills the confidence in you to know what abilities you have within yourself. It teaches you that primal instinct, that primal emotion that lives within all of us. And so I think, Jacob, you touched on this briefly, but we don't want to eliminate things from society. We want to learn how to overcome them. We want to learn how to grow past them. We want to learn, oh, this is what bullying looks like. Why is it happening? Okay, he sees this at fun. The bully sees this as fun or play. But like, what's the underlying energy that's occurring within this dynamic? Oh, is he trying to sharpen him? Like, you could easily look at it as, you know, my bully was trying to make me better, as instilling confidence with me to stand up for myself. Maybe that's what the universe was trying to teach me, and I didn't know how to do it. And once I did it, there was a huge energetic release. I remember just, you know, you're kind of like heaving because there's so much energy that's going through your body. And it's like finally I stood up for myself. And with that brought confidence of me being able to stand up for myself. And, you know, Jonathan, to your point, I remember afterwards, you know, people talking about how I got into a fight the day before and girls coming up thinking it was the coolest thing in the world. Of course, at the time, I had no idea what they were talking about, but it was that ability to stand up for yourself. They're like, oh, Clayton, the pacifist, the nice guy, stood up for himself. Like, what? Like, what's going on here? And so it's definitely something that we need to understand the energy of, which means we need to understand ourselves better. We need to understand our bodies better. We need to understand our emotions better. And this is going to open up a more prosperous world. It will help us overcome those lower level emotions, as opposed to just ignoring them and acting as if they don't exist. It's learning how to live with them, as opposed to trying to completely cut them out.
But it's also, bullying today is different than it was in our day and age, bro. Like, cyberbullying was not that much of a thing. You may have had one or two people that like had pictures of them make the rounds, and like that was about it. And most of those pictures today you can't find. You know what I mean? Like, that, it pretty much died when we left high school. Some more than others, yes. These days, these kids have a platform to shout from the literal rooftops whatever the hell they want that could completely ruin someone's life forever, because the internet never forgets these days.
It's more so humiliation than it's a step
that's
up.
That's what I'm saying. And that's the thing. Like you were saying, your bully may have been trying to sharpen you, but like, he wasn't in a good position to be the one to teach you that. Maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. Life puts people in our paths for certain reasons, but like, there was probably a better way to teach you that rather than constant bullying to the point of needing physical altercation. So again, multiple layers of that onion to peel back, no doubt.
Well, that's a good point, right? Is there are certainly a better way to be taught that. And this is where it comes into upgrading our education system.
Right.
Understanding why bullying happens. Like, what, like, you look at the Republican debates, like those have been nothing but ruthless. You could argue that's a form of bullying. Well, the point of it, at least at an energetic level, not that it has to happen, again, not that it has to happen, but what's happening is we're trying to figure out who is the most fit, who is able to contend with the world in the best way, who is able to have the strongest sword or the sharpest iron. Now, again, I can see a future where we move past that. Like, a part of my campaign, I'm not here to call out certain individuals. I'm looking at the system as a whole that needs to be upgraded. I see it that people are puppets, or they're captured, if you will, by the system that it is, and they're operating within that framework. My vision is to upgrade that system. So I'm not going to bully an individual person at all. I'm going to talk about the issues with the system. And so now, my point of this, though, is that at least that we're able to bring in that viewpoint of understanding why these happen at an individual level. But in order to do that, we need to upgrade the system as a whole to see that.
Agreed, dude. I love this talk, dude. And this is something that, you know, there are a lot of politicians that they're very surface level. They say one thing, and then whenever they actually get into office, none of it is implemented. And that's something that's very sad. You know, they all talk about being able to be, what's the word? Not the see-through word, translucent, what's the
transparent
word? Transparent. Yeah. They all talk about transparency, and then there's the whole Freedom of Information Act and stuff like that, but you go into some of these articles within Freedom of Information Act, a lot of it's redacted, a lot of it's blacked out, and you see that really trickling down into politics and certain governors and people of people on behalf of the government, they kind of give us just the surface level bullshit, and there really is no transparency, especially whenever you're talking about taxes, whenever you're talking about certain laws, rules for thee, not for me. The thing that scares most of us here is some of these new implementation of certain laws and certain, you know, this is where it gets into that that woke mentality and how you implement that into some of the AI systems, which will, you know, ultimately eventually be our governing body of security and people being able to hack into your social media and everything within your phone. Everything that's private and privacy has absolutely gone out the window, and now it will be governed by whatever the AI deems appropriate and what's not. The problem is that, you know, the AI is built with such code that it is far leaning one way or another, and it's not exactly the way that most people look at the way the world should be run. So I say all that to get to this. What are your, do you have any worries about where AI and this social credit system that is looking to be implemented all around the world, is there anything that, you know, within your party that takes a deeper look at that?
I mean, you know, I think this comes back to what it feels like is keeping your mind on the world you want to live in, right? And I see it through a social programming. Just like, not even just through the media, there's the programming that this is what's coming for America. This is what's coming for America. This is what's coming for America. Credit system, America, credit system, America. And so we really need to stay focused on that. This is not the reality that we want to create for ourselves. We don't want to have that. So the idea is basically focus your mind on the ideas or the future that you want to have. If you're constantly sitting in this world thinking about how that's going to occur, that's how it's going to occur. This comes back to the root word for the word man, which is manus, which is mind. Everything starts with the mind. That's where this all begins. And through confusion and through fear, this is how those ideas incept into one's mind. On a bigger picture, let me see here. On a bigger picture, again, I see it as coming back to education, because we are the ones who are training the models, the training the computers of what is right to say, what is wrong to say. And so I would offer, if you feel that you are operating at your highest level, if you feel as though you are called to it, you're energized by the idea of working with AI, you should. I see so many people who have the best interest of people at heart, and they want to shy away from these things. I mean, it just leaves room for people who don't have the best interest of people. And that becomes a slippery slope. But I think that if people are truly acting from their highest excitement, and their highest excitement is saying, hey, get into AI, like, let's learn how to use this, that is where they should be placing their attention and their energy, because that's only going to bring about the best and the highest excitement for all of mankind. On top of this, you know, it comes back to emotional maturity. It becomes to our maturity as a people. If we don't elevate our maturity, our individual maturity, and this is the burden of every single individual who's listening to my voice, and the burden of every single American, and quite frankly, the burden of every single person on earth, is to increase their own emotional maturity. Because if you do that, if you understand energy, if you understand these things that we're not taught in school, the things we're discussing on this podcast, then this future will not exist. This will just be a figment. It'll stay a figment of one's imagination and will never come into fruition, because we will not be A, focusing on that as a future, and B, we will know ourselves emotionally well enough to know we need to say no to these things. transparency is important, which you brought up, and we do need to be transparent, but we need to be transparent with ourselves first. We need to understand what's blocking us, what our fears are, where we are coming up short in our own lives, so that we're able to create a better life for ourselves and then a better life for everyone around us. And hopefully I'm a byproduct of showing exactly how that works. I've done the inner work, which I'm not a big fan of that buzzword, but the inner work to understand my own internal limitations of why I was ashamed of myself in certain situations, why I was afraid of things, because by no stretch of the imagination am I perfect. I'm just a byproduct of somebody who has really, truly evaluated my own thoughts, who has done the internal emotional struggle, who has researched about emotional intelligence, and am now in a place of like, oh, I have found peace and bliss within myself. How do I bring that to other people? How do I bring that to the world? Well, in my path, and it won't be the same for everyone, but my path is running for Congress. And so this is how we can all do our individual part. The equality, right? And equality is another huge issue that comes into this, right? Equality is a word. It's like, okay, we're all the same, and so we need to all get the same stuff and all do the same things. But this is a farce. This is not true equality. What I'm deeming it is more, we need enlightened equality, which is validating the individual. Okay, you didn't do the best on a math test. Your math isn't your strong suit. Let's not say that they have to pass math. Maybe we need to direct them down a different course. Maybe they're meant to be the greatest podcaster of all time. Let's empower them. Let's give them the tools to do that. Let's show them that way forward. And this is true equality, which is enlightened equality, which is bringing people to realize, validating their uniqueness to fit it within the bigger picture so that we can all become better because of that.
I love that idea, dude.
I see this to a point. To a point. And what I mean by this is I got into this debate with somebody a couple years back, and this person was an anti-capitalist, and still to this day very proudly proclaims themselves to be one. And the argument that was presented was basically a doctor shouldn't make any more or less than any other person out here in America. Like, we should all be making the same basic amount of livable, but still livable wage. Like, nobody should be a part of the upper 1%. There shouldn't be one at all. Socialist tendencies. I disagree with this person.
I couldn't disagree more. Yeah.
But so the reason why this, I was like, look, supply and demand is a thing. Like, a medical doctor has all these years of education to become a craftsman of this very small, minute faction of crafts work. Meanwhile, your local basket weaver is probably more of a dime a dozen than you'd think. The basket weaver shouldn't make as much as the doctor. And this person was saying everybody should be able to make success off of their dreams, and the American financial system should be set up to support that. And it's like, okay, that's not exactly what you're saying. You're saying everybody should have the education system curtailed to where they can get the best shot available at career finding, at adulthood, at knowing what their strengths or weaknesses is, so that they don't waste time doing X or Y or Z thing and then looking up like, damn, I should have chose this route, I should have chose that route, correct?
Well, right. And, okay. And to elaborate on this, because it's actually a really good point, our current system is set up to reward doctors, to reward engineers, and this is a very important part of society, don't get me wrong.
Sure.
The issue becomes is that if you don't understand what you desire, what you prefer, if you don't understand your emotions, you're going to feel, if you're brought up in a system that tells you that you're dumb, that you aren't smart, then you're going to go your whole life believing that you aren't smart. You're going to go your whole life in believing that you should be a janitor, that you should be someone who picks up trash, you know, a garbage man, things like this. When in actuality, if you cultivate that human spirit to be the best thing that they can be, maybe their passion is to play the violin, and that is what they were put on earth to do, but they don't know that. They're going to go and become extremely valuable as a violinist. They'll make millions of dollars. And here's the thing is, let me think about how to articulate this. We all have that very unique thing that we are the best at doing, but nobody really truly knows it. And this is what the American dream is supposed to be about, is knowing what that one thing is that you are put on earth to do. Everybody has a purpose. Every religion believes this. This is the core fundamental thing of God, of spirit, of source, is that we all have a very unique thing to contribute to the whole. We need to figure out what that thing is. If we were told we were dumb our whole life and yet the measuring stick was doing math, then we're going to think we're dumb our whole life. I had someone on the podcast and they were saying something about the tax system and how they're too dumb to understand the tax system. And I was like, no. I was like, first of all, you're not dumb for not understanding it. It was a system that was put in place to be ultra confusing, extra confusing for you to not understand. On top of that, you're only measuring your intelligence in one vertical. Do I understand the tax system? Intelligence is so much greater than this, so much broader than this. None of us, I mean, you can learn from, let's say, nature. You can look at a tree. None of us know how to be a tree. I mean, if you look at one long enough, maybe you'll figure it out, but you can't go and be a tree. So to be a tree is a form of intelligence, and none of us know how to do that. That doesn't make you dumb. That just means you're not here on earth to be a tree. And so we need to, again, upgrading the education system, need to teach people how to make mistakes, how to try things. Okay, you tried doing a podcast and it failed and you don't like doing it anymore. Don't do it anymore. You know, and I guess even in there, the idea of failure needs to be updated. What does it even truly mean to be successful? You can live, you know, I, for 2 years of my life, a year and a half, lived with my parents trying to make my podcast work. Question is, was I successful? Depends on your measuring stick.
Correct.
My measuring stick was feeling aligned, feeling happy, learning about the spiritual nature of the world, seeing what other people thought. In my mind, it was a huge success. If you measure it from how much money you made or, you know, the fact that you're living with your parents, then you're going to deem it as a failure. Sure. So this is another perception issue of how are we deeming success and failure? Okay, you guys do this podcast for another 10 years and then decide to stop, right? Whatever it is. Is it a failure or is it a success? Again, it comes down to the metric because there's going to be something else that opens up for you down the road. You know, this being a politician, it's already a success. You know, it doesn't need to be defined by whether or not you win the nomination or not. It's giving me something to encourage this way of viewing the world. And by that, my metric, it's already been successful.
And you see, as you're talking about passing and failure, right? I think the people, as we're talking about developing, and especially developing emotional intelligence, failing, trying to achieve something and falling short and learning how to take that loss and lose gracefully and learn from your shortcomings and come at it again from a better angle next time and how to persevere and how to dig deep and how to learn from your mistakes. These are fundamental building blocks that I would argue are not being taught to kids these days. If anything, everybody's a winner and everybody's good all the time. And no matter what you do, you were acceptable. You passed regardless of how much effort you put forward. And it's just great. People are forgetting how to fail. To further that point, look at this young man's generation of dating. None of them know how to like actually communicate with anybody face to face. It's all online. There's no actual interaction. The going up to a woman and shooting your shot and getting rejected and having to make the walk of shame back to your boys and them clowning you all night, which was fundamental ego check for the young buck of a certain generation. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They would make a young 20-year-old be like, oh, damn, all right. And like, you know what I'm saying? That's a part of growing up. That's gone. Absolutely gone.
But there's also something that can be learned through the evolution of these things.
I mean, yes.
You know, I personally met my wife on Facebook dating, bro.
Sure.
Now I shot my shot and we had our talks and, you know, she was able to see my pictures and my likes and my dislikes and my interests and everything. But if I'm not conversating with her in a way that flows in a direction that she enjoys the way the magic is flowing, now she's not really going to take heed to it. But I think that you're from a generation
that learned that. You learned failure.
What I'm saying is that just because things are changing doesn't mean you can't adapt to them.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, it's like, you know, many of coaches have always said, bro, like, yes, winning is great, but you're going to learn so much more through a loss because now you're going to study that tape a little bit more. Now you're going to be looking at, did I make that proper read? Did I miss that block? Should I have blocked the guy in front of me rather than, you know, traveling up? If you're a lineman, you're traveling up. Are you blocking the center, or is your job supposed to be to, you know, down block onto the linebacker or whatever? My point is that you're always going to observe a lot more through loss than you are in winning.
And this system is rigging it to where there's no more losses. for anyone.
Right.
Everybody just wins.
And that's the problem is that, you know, they're handing out, you know, there's, I've said it before, but there's this little, like a little kid football program, like Pee Wee football program, in which they let all the kids play all the positions. And it doesn't matter if they win or lose, as long as they're having fun. Let me tell you something, bro. You ain't learning shit through having fun. No. Fun is a good feeling.
Winning
but
is fun.
There is winning is the most fun. Let's just be real.
That's true.
So if you're trying to have fun, then you're trying to win. It's not going out there and letting somebody who can't throw a football 5 yards play quarterback. Like, get out of here with that. You're not learning shit. So I think that, you know, we do need to get back to, you know, a lot of the strengths of which, you know, how a lot of us were raised. But also adapt to the new ways of living as well. I think there's a way.
Well, this is a beautiful, and this is a beautiful parallel right here. The old model of equality is everybody plays the same exact number of snaps from each position. This is not true equality. We need to move to enlightened equality, where we're utilizing the nature of that individual to the best of their ability. And even more to touch on this idea of loss, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. There's a very common phrase, which is you either win or you learn. And it could not be so more true. I've won tournaments and I've come in second in tournaments and I've won tournament came in third. But I don't learn anything whenever I get gold. I learn whenever I lose. I'm like, oh, they beat me by doing this move, by getting to side control and passing my guard this way. Let me learn how to upgrade my game. That's when you get better. And This is huge. I mean, this is huge in updating our mindset of needing to learn in this way. And even more so, I'm very careful with myself of saying whenever I've made a mistake, because I've noticed that if you learn something, then it wasn't a mistake. If you learn something, if you do something and you mess up and you kind of go sideways and you don't really know, if you learn something, that was not a mistake. You know, I know I have made air quotes mistakes in my past, and I actually kind of look forward to when those get brought up in the general conversation, because it's going to be a tremendous opportunity for us to learn at a grand scale from my own mistakes. And I'm going to honor those. You know, this comes back to transparency. I'm going to honor those. I'm going to say, yeah, I made this air quote mistake. I was less than perfect in this situation, but here's the beautiful thing. Here's what I learned from it. Here's what you guys can learn from it. You know, it's a smart person who learns from their mistakes, and it's a wise person who can learn from somebody else's mistakes. And this is another element we need to bring to politics. We need to stop having these politicians who were perfect their entire life, who knew since day one, I'm going to be the next president of the United States, when this is a sham. This, you're not an actual human being if that's the case. You didn't go through trials and tribulations. You didn't understand what it meant to suffer and to quote unquote lose. So if you've never lost, then you've never learned anything. Do we really want someone leading the country who hasn't learned something? I mean, I think that's just a fundamental breakdown of our entire system as well.
Yeah, if they were eating from a silver spoon, and not to say that, you know, the people eating from a silver spoon can't then learn something throughout life. Just look at the story of Buddha. He was brought up eating from a silver spoon. It wasn't until he went out into the real world that he actually learned something. So there's a lot of things that you can learn from loss. And, like, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, many people have, like, certain regrets, and those regrets eat at them. And I always try to tell them that that's the wrong way to look at life. It's okay to have regrets as long as you're looking at them in a positive way. Are you trying to transmutate that regret into a lesson, or are you just going to hold that regret and use it as a negative emotion that inevitably eats you alive? There's ways of looking at these things. So before we go off any further into the weeds of, you know, what is right, but I love this conversation. I would really like to look at your website and look at some of the policies that you're hoping to be able to implement into the new world. And one thing that I really found very interesting is your money waste, fraud, and abuse of data section. And the objective, it says, is to eliminate financial waste, fraud, and abuse, and then crack down on retail crime and stuff like that. I think that the things that you're really diving into, I mean, can you delve a little bit deeper on what this actually means?
Sure. And I appreciate you bringing this up, because this document is really a living, breathing document. So as I do more research, this goes back into transparency, you guys are going to see it real time. You know, people talk about things. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Let me put this on this document. So that way people truly know what's fueling my thought processes. It gives people an insight into what sources I'm using. Do they disagree with the source? Let's figure out, because the data exists. Let's just see where all these things are coming from. So waste, fraud, and abuse is a tremendous thing. And I think it's sprinkled really throughout a lot of the different sections. Within regards to this, I mean, it's just a highlight of the amount of money and the amount of value that is just getting wasted within our country. I'm not sure specifically what you're interested in diving into, but I mean, there's tons of reports of federal agencies who can't track billions of dollars. And yet we have instances where the IRS is going after, you know, people who miss a 12 cent payment on their tax return. You know, maybe if you can scroll down a little, I think there's some statistics on how much money we waste. Maybe go up just a little bit.
All right.
Yeah, right here. Let's see. In the Washington Examiner, there's 20 federal agencies that have wasted $2.3 trillion in taxpayers just in improper payments. Just by making an improper payment, they've wasted $2.3 trillion. Imagine if you, an American taxpayer citizen, messed up a $2.3 payment somewhere. It's you're going to get prosecuted by the IRS. And this equates to $15 billion wasted per month. $15 billion. You know, and so people ask, where are we going to get all this money to fund education and to upgrade our education system? It's like, we have it, we're creating it, and yet it's just being wasted. We don't know where it goes. We don't know who to spend it on. You know, we need to use this money for so many things. Local regenerative farming, we haven't even gotten to that yet, but that's a huge thing that we need to reinvigorate, because we waste so much food. We waste like 40% of our food that just from transportation, from throwing it out, from not understanding it. So there's a lot to unpack here, but at least this gives you like I'm not sure if there's a specific thing you want to dive into, but this was just a general idea of all the places that we waste money in our country.
Well, I like the overarching thing that really is being talked about here as far as the fraud and the abuse of data. But also a point that you made right here as far as taking the handcuffs off of the police and increase their presence, also getting into funding foreign wars and overspending. So I was really, you know, kind of focused on this section right here as far as taking the handcuffs off the police and increasing their presence. What exactly do you mean by that?
Yeah, this is a powerful point as well. So, you know, we had this whole movement of defund the police, which is comical at best, you know. So we actually need to increase the amount of funding that is going to police. First of all, need to be increased pay. They're putting their life on the line. Every single time that they make a traffic stop, every single time they approach somebody, you don't know who they're going to be talking to. They don't know who they're going to be talking to. So we need to increase this education. We also need to bring forth within the police force what I call adrenaline training. I think jiu-jitsu would be a great way to show this. Why do I say this? I remember my very first jiu-jitsu tournament. You know, so here we are in an arena, safe environment, right? There's people around, there's medics around. I'm not actually going to die. But whenever I went up to fight my very first fight, the adrenaline overload that came through my body induced a blackout state. I only remember bits and pieces from my very first fight, which ultimately I won, which was really cool. But the point is that I don't remember consciously almost any of my fight. Now, why is this? Well, whenever adrenaline at that level comes into your body, you just go into this natural state of this, just your, what is it called?
Primal.
It's like your muscle memory. Your muscle memory kicks in. You don't know what's going on. You can't even consciously think. So if you look at majority of the police altercations, not all of them, but the ones that have been touted in the media, the first one that comes to mind is the female officer who thought she was grabbing her taser and actually pulled out her gun and shot the guy.
That is just horribly not knowing your tool belt. I that's bullshit.
You don't know your tool belt, but you're not trained. I mean, this comes back to the adrenaline training. You're
absolutely not trained up. Correct.
you're, it's you and another person who's arguably bigger than you. Again, in the jiu-jitsu setting, like, everything was even. I know this guy doesn't have a knife. I know he doesn't have a gun. I know he's the same weight class as me. But then we put that out in the field, and you have a female cop. You have a man who's much larger than her. She has no idea what he has. She has a family she wants to go back home to and see at the end of the day. So, you know, you put all of these extra environments in, and the adrenaline kicks in, and nobody knows how to handle it. This comes back to education, of understanding our bodies. So we definitely need to increase the training for police. We need to increase their pay, and we need to increase their presence. I mean, I remember a time whenever we would honor police, and now they're seen as like second-class citizens. I mean, this is horrendous. And then we see in these major cities, you know, the retail crime just going through the roof, because why should a police officer risk their life when there's no honor, there's no pay? They want to just get home and see their family. They don't want to be blasted in the media for quote unquote being racist whenever they're sitting there trying to keep the peace. You know, it's crazy to me that we're in this situation. It's not crazy, I guess, but it's a situation that there is a way out of, but we need to start having the conversation about how to get out of there, which includes all of these things such as adrenaline training, increasing the pay, increasing the pensions of police officers, and then even more so honoring them within society for the work that they do.
Well, you know, as far as increasing their pay, you know, you could say that, but as far as inflation goes, that always goes against increasing certain people's pay. So for the longest time, there was this long, like this big outreach that, you know, McDonald's workers should get paid $15 an hour.
Yeah, but there's more McDonald's employees than there are police officers.
But no, I'm just trying to make a point though. Okay. But the point is that those people wanted $15 an hour. Well, the problem is that they are getting $13, $14, $15 an hour as just a walk-in. But the problem is that inflation has made it so that, you know, whenever you're making $15 an hour, it's basically the same amount of, you know, what you were making 20 years ago, sure. what $8 an hour equated to. I mean, it used to be that $15 an hour, if you were making that was, I mean, you could live off of that. Mm-hmm. And so people nowadays, they're making $15 an hour, and you're still having to work two or three jobs. And that trickles down into the it trickles down into the economy in such a way that it affects the police force, it affects the teachers and everything, to where, you know, if you had a salary of $50,000 a year, that was pretty damn good, you know, 20, 25 years ago. But nowadays it's like, bro, you almost need to make 70, 75 grand a year just to keep your head above water. And inflation is absolutely tearing that apart. So we can talk about money and what people should be making, but ultimately, your salary or your hourly pay should be raising if inflation is also raising, and you're just not seeing that.
Of course. I was a victim of this exact thing. A victim. That's not the right word to use here. Let's avoid that word.
Right.
This is a situation that happened to me at my old job when I was a software engineer. We were having inflation that was going up, you know, 6-7%, and my pay was going up like 2%. You know, this, and even people who, these were non-promotion years, people who got promotions, it still was only around 5%. But even maybe if we get back to the energetics of it, we need to understand, again, upgrading our education system, understand the energy of money. Right? Money is just a value exchange. We put a lot of pressure on ourselves to make money, but it's really just value. So if you want to have more value to contribute to society, you got to increase yourself. You got to increase the value that you're producing to society. So I bring this up because we keep trying to, right? The current model is that we need to increase minimum wage. We need to get paid more for these little things. And there's truth to that. I'm not saying it's wrong. But a piece of the puzzle that we're not discussing is, how do we empower ourselves as individuals? You know, let's use someone who's working at McDonald's or, you know, Chick-fil-A. You know, they're making a set minimum wage. It's like, well, do you have the knowledge, right? And this is where it comes back to knowledge. We have not given kids, we have not given our citizens the knowledge of how to increase your worth. Like, what is it that you truly want to pursue in life? I don't think there's too many people who grow up thinking, I want to be a McDonald's cashier my entire life.
That should be your dream, right?
Yeah. Like, we have dreams as what we want to be, whether it's an artist, whether it's a, hey, keep going back to it, but a podcaster, you know, no matter what it is. And so if we're not taught to take those risks, if we don't understand the energies within our body of how to overcome fear, how to really, truly grapple with those internal energies to push, to pursue the dream that we truly want, then we take the soft, easy route of becoming an employee, and then we want pay raises for these things. And again, I'm not saying that those aren't important. We should certainly look into that. But the point that I'm trying to make here is that I want us to follow our dreams as citizens. I want the people to follow their dreams, like to follow the actual American dream that at some level still exists, but we need to have an upgrade of the system to be able to truly pursue the American dream that our founding fathers, that the people before us really wanted to have for, and had a vision for this country to produce.
Right. I agree with you. You have to, like you said, it's about how your intrinsic value, so to speak, to the collective whole. And that may sound socialistic on the surface, but what I'm saying is a carpenter with 35 years experience in his craft has more of a tangible thing that he can charge per hour of his time and his services because of his knowledge, because of his experience, all these things, than a 19-year-old college dropout who's working at Starbucks. I don't believe that these two should be making equal pay or living in equal statuses. Now, that's not to say one is worth, like one is a better person than the other. That's not what I'm saying. I am saying that the 19-year-old should find whatever work calls to them or whatever work makes enough money to where they're happy with it, whatever the case may be, and pursue that. And yes, I believe that we should have a system in place to have more open doors for people to go and pursue whatever they want. And I do think America has way more open doors to allow to people than the vast majority of other countries. Arguably, I know people will say True. That the European models has way more opportunities for X and for Y and for Z. And there's debates to be made per specific subsets and specific disciplines and specific concentrations, arguably. I mean, but overall, I would say that America really does have a lot of opportunities, but like you said, not everybody understands that those opportunities are available to them because no one's ever told them that the door is wide open if you just step through.
As we move into energy, you know, the current system doesn't want us to get off of oil and gas. And you might sit there and say, oh, well, you know, we're talking about climate crisis, we're installing solar panels. Well, first of all, there's a gag order. If you create a solar panel that's more than 20% efficient, it gets seized by the government under the national security. It's technically a National Secrecy Act. I believe it was in 1971. It's in that paper. But the reason they do this is because it's national security. And how, you think to yourself, okay, how can it possibly be national security that a solar panel is more than 20% efficient? Well, if you have ultra efficient solar panels, you reduce the need for gas. If you reduce the need for gas, you're no longer funding big oil. Oh, big oil pays our politicians in order for them to pass things that increase the price of oil. Oh, we have war, which increases the cost of energy, which kills innocent people tremendously. I forget exact numbers, but I know that for every dollar that energy increases, you kill several million people. And I don't want to over exaggerate that. So I should find the exact statistic. I know that it's in that document somewhere.
You know, we've seen about how some people are able to power their houses based on just by plugging a metal rod into the ground and taking that Earth's energy. And that's where I was talking about that can be seen as something that's woo woo. But
I have not seen that, but I would love to see that.
Oh, it's for sure. I'll thing, recommend. Dude.
It's real. I mean, you know, just because you don't think something's real doesn't mean that it's not real.
I'm right. saying I would love to know the technology they're using in order to make that sure. work. I'm not saying that that's complete bullshit because blah, blah, blah. No. I'm saying I would love to see that video.
But the that's point is if that could become common knowledge, then maybe right. we could mm-hmm. move further away from oil and gas. And you know, that's a polarizing topic because a lot of people make their money off of the oil and gas. And what are those people going to do? I mean, here in Louisiana, a lot of people, you know, there's oil refineries and a lot of chemical refineries out here. And that's how a lot of people make their living. So I guess that's really the big polarizing topic that it's okay. You know, look, if you want to get rid of the oil and gas, who gives a shit? If there's a cleaner, I mean, like a more natural way so that we don't have to go and fight these foreign wars for such oil and stuff like that.
No, but you just have to fight against the big oil lobbyists in D.C.
Right. And you bringing up that document that was from the 70s as far as, you know, how you're not allowed to take fucking 20% of the solar energy into your house. That is asinine.
Yeah. So it's the efficiency of the solar panels. So like the amount that they can pull in from the sun. So if, you know, you have like a 100 square foot solar panel, if it's too efficient at capturing that sun, that's whenever it gets seized. And so furthermore, there's a great documentary. I want to give a big shout out to Dr. Stephen Greer. It's called The Lost Century and How to Reclaim It. And he goes in much more detail than what we're going to cover here. But the core point of it is that these are called over unity devices. I've also heard them called free field generator. What is it? FFGs, I believe it is, or FEGs. Field energy devices, I think, is what they're also called. I know them as over unity devices. So these are essentially devices that, and I know this is going to sound contrary to what most engineers believe. Again, being an engineer myself, I had doubts about this, but essentially you put in, let's say like 1 kilowatt of energy and you get 50 kilowatts out. Now, the reason that people are going to disagree with this is because our education system, which again needs upgrading, has taught us time and time again that you can't extract out more energy than what you put in. And time and time again, there have been massive amounts of data on people who have created such devices. They get blocking patents, so they're not allowed to patent these devices. And then they get seized by the governments. There's mysterious assassinations and deaths involved in every single one of these situations. The most recent one was in 1995, where Stan Meyer created a water-powered engine.
Yes.
And he essentially met with some of the big heads of oil and of car companies, and he was mysteriously poisoned. It's like,
I would argue even more recent than that, sir. Do you remember the shooting that happened at a little shopping center up north somewhere not too few years ago? The security guard that was subsequently murdered from this altercation came out of nowhere, had just made a water-powered engine.
Yep. And basically pulling that from rainwater, bro, which is crazy. Yes. Not only from rainwater, but also the water that comes from just humidity in general.
Yeah. And on top of that, you want to go to the next level. There's evidence of people who have created devices that extract clean water from air. So first of all, we can solve the whole issue of natural water if we were just to use that. On top of that, if you were able to combine a generator that pulls water from air, and then you have an engine that uses water to run a car, we could now effectively run cars off of just air. So these aren't like crazy ideas. They're very feasible, but yet there's no backing by the government. You know, you have the alphabet soup agencies that essentially censor and collect all of these things and then throw them, you know, either in the back or they use them for their own nefarious purposes. And this, going back to transparency, we need to lift this. We have to give this technology to the people. I mean, they deserve it. They deserve it more than anything. You know, we have to stop harvesting, you know, the earth's bones with, you know, minerals. Look at all the terrible things that's been happening with cobalt in the Congo. Yeah. I mean, it's horrendous. The work conditions that kids have been put in, you know, people with these defects, you know, birth defects, you know, they're developing cancer at young ages. It's horrendous. And all of this in the name of mining and taking from the earth. And instead we can just utilize energy that's existing all around us within this room. Within this room, there's enough energy to power the entire world 10 times over, probably more. And yet, whenever people create devices that can harness that energy, well, they mysteriously take their life, or they end up dead, and all of their paperwork gets seized and it gets classified. So, you know, if I'm completely wrong, why are these papers and these things not being investigated? So a large part of my goal with energy is for us to fund this research. Prove me wrong. I want to find research that actually proves this wrong. And yet everything else that I have ever seen has proved that this is possible, and yet has just been hidden from the American people.
Right. I mean, ultimately it's the dark underbelly of capitalism that a lot of people don't really want to look into. Yes, is capitalism.
Well, but see, here's the thing, it's not actually capitalism. This is where it falls into crony capitalism. Because if it was truly capitalism, all of this would be free.
Right.
We would have this knowledge. We would have empowered these entrepreneurs. We could pay for these things, right? But the fact of the matter is that the crony capitalism comes in when you have the Rockefeller types who then, or who was it? It wasn't Rockefeller.
It was Rockefeller. It was J.P. Morgan. It was It was Carnegie. It was Edison. It was the Rothschild. There was so many.
I'm thinking. Yeah, you're 100% right. I'm thinking specifically of the person who told Nikola Tesla, Westinghouse, who said, if there's not a meter on it, I don't want it. Right. So this is where like that crony nature comes into play of how, losing my train of thought. Oh, the crony nature, right? It's not true capitalism. Capitalism is freedom, is people's ability to let the free market decide. But when you have powers involved that then warp that, we're no longer living in what capitalism is.
Agreed. Agreed 1,000%. And I mean, to that point, it also, we have to look at every country's got their own version of a financial system. Certain countries do better in certain things than others. America runs on its military industrial complex. That's kind of what our big shabam has been for the last century or so. And I don't see that going anywhere anytime soon. What is your political party's beliefs as far as our military budget? Do we believe that it should be a strong military? Do you believe we should have budgetary cutbacks? Where is your party's alignment on that issue?
Well,
because as you were talking about funding the police more, which again, couldn't agree more with, now let's talk national level.
Well, I want to I want to speak for myself. I know the party's position is, you know, peace on earth, global harmony. Me personally, I mean, of course, I agree with that as well. But then whenever we're talking about the military, first of all, I can definitely see upgrading the cost or the payment of military personnel.
Hell yeah.
The question becomes, are we putting them in other countries to defend other countries? If we are, then those countries need to pay up. They need to pay for the protection that the American people are offering. There's no reason that your paycheck should be funding, you know, our people to be overseas. They should be at home protecting their home. And so that's one part of it. Another part of it, you know, is holding the accountability to these warmongers that we see all across the world. A huge thing. So I even went to the United Nations building in New York. I took a day trip and we wrote out, you can find this on my Instagram. You should be able to find it on the website. We wrote a letter, our policy or a, our party wrote up a document stating, calling for the UN to prosecute these leaders of Israel and Hamas for the war crimes that they have committed in killing innocent people. You know, and here comes back to another way of viewing the world. All of the media is saying, whose side are you on? Are you on Israel's side? Or are you on Hamas's side? And the problem is that this is not the way that we need to be viewing wars.
Right.
This is the leaders of these countries having their little fad and taking it out on the innocent people that live within these countries. The innocent people do not want to be at war with each other. They want peace and prosperity.
For sure.
And so we take the side of the innocent people. This fits into the whole protecting innocence. We no longer want wars to occur. And yet you have these leaders of Hamas and Israel. Once the dust settles, their family will be safe. They'll be fine. They're not going to be a part of the cleanup effort whatsoever. It's the citizens who are going to bear the brunt of that. And this is horrendous. And so my trek to New York to get this to the United Nations, to Secretary General Antonio Guterres, is to call for him to prosecute them under the Geneva Convention. Now, the 1949 Geneva Convention, in my opinion, it's a little lazy, if you will, on calling out these war crimes. Honestly, my opinion is if one innocent person is killed, you should be held accountable for that. Now, it has some constraints around it. I do believe that these leaders should see their fair day in court. I'm only subject to what the media has told us. But from what it's told me is tens of thousands of innocent people have died and been killed. These should be accounts on the highest standard held against these leaders. And yet everyone's just calling for a ceasefire. Oh, we need a ceasefire. That's only a pause. We don't need to pause this war. We need to end it. We need to stop the killing of all of these innocent people. And the only way I see us doing that is by holding them accountable. So hypothetical nature, if I were to get into office, you know, I don't know that you could actually do this at a representative level. Maybe there is some sort of legislation that could be put forth. I would need to investigate this more. So I'm open to this. But we need to have a way to hold these leaders accountable. We have the laws on the books. We're just not executing them. So we need a push of the American people. We need a push of Congress. We need a push of the presidency to urge the United Nations to condemn these leaders for the egregious acts on humanity that they have committed.
I agree. Yes. I mean, they're innocent shouldn't be getting murdered. And this is actually, you know, I say it all the time, dude, I am not on anybody's side. I think that anytime like innocent people are getting murdered, you know, you hear it from the Palestinian side or the Hamas side that, you know, that Israel is coming in there and they're wiping out people by the tens of thousands and stuff like that. Then you hear it from the Israeli side and they're like, no, we're just going in there and we're, you know, a couple of innocents are going down. And so it's really hard to really like garner the absolute truth of what's really going on. And so whenever it's hard to really understand, then people are led to picking sides because they let it's the same thing as left and right, red and blue. You know, if you don't have a profound understanding of exactly what's going on, then the people who you trust in, you're now believing what they say.
I'll throw this out. The same points that I made about the whole Ukraine and Russia situation. If you couldn't find this place on a map 8 months ago, then you have no basis to stand on your opinion on the matter. That's just a fair statement. If you couldn't tell me last year what the situation between Palestine and Israel was, then I do not care on what your opinion of it is now. I'm sorry.
But it's within human nature to be on the side and want to protect those of innocence. It doesn't matter country you're living in.
And that's the end of part two. I hope you guys enjoyed, and I hope that this even more emphasizes the need for us to stand with the innocent people. It's not about Israel. It's not about being on the side of Palestine. It's not about being on the side of Ukraine or on the side of Russia. It's about being on the side of the innocent people whose homes and lives are being absolutely destroyed by these pointless wars. So hopefully that point, that idea can at least fester a little bit more in your mind. And if it doesn't, and I didn't make my point clear, then I'm sure that I will make my point clear whenever we talk about it in the sixth dimension.